What's on the menu tonight, then?
I have the same sandwich four nights running, Monday to Thursday. I've just remembered I was going to ask everyone who's having the most boring tea tonight, but I think I've won anyway.
I think no matter what, you've won that one. Remind us what it is. What was it? Tuna and salad dressing?
Tuna, salad cream, end of brown bread.
That's it.
Right. Anyway, on that exciting note, Kelly Cates is here with 5 Live Sport. We will see you tomorrow at 4.
Have a lovely evening. See you then.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 7 o'clock. This is Adam Porter. Sir Keir Starmer has pledged national renewal in his first speech to a Labour Party conference as Prime Minister. He promised to rebuild public services and protect working people and said he was prepared to take tough long-term decisions to do so. Addressing concerns his government had been too gloomy since taking office, he said there was light at the end of the tunnel. The Health Secretary Wes Streeting said it had been right to inform the public about the difficulties the country faced.
I think it was absolutely right to spend time spelling out in terms the challenge we've inherited, whether it's the £22 billion black hole in the public finances or the shocking state of the NHS diagnosed very accurately by Lord Darzi. So that was important, but of course, this is a government that's about the future, not the past. And I think that came across very strongly in the Prime Minister's speech today.
President Biden has insisted a diplomatic solution can be found to avoid an all-out war in Lebanon. He was speaking at the UN General Assembly as Israel claimed to have killed a leading Hezbollah commander in an airstrike in Beirut. Two men have been arrested in connection with the murder of a 15-year-old boy in southeast London. Dehuan Campbell was discovered with fatal stab wounds in Woolwich on Sunday. A former police officer who admitted defrauding millions of pounds from investors in his horse racing syndicate has been jailed for 6 years. Maidstone Crown Court heard that Michael Stanley, an ex-sergeant with Kent Police, misused the money invested by around 6,000 members into the Lay Easy Racing Syndicate. Terry Wildey was one of the victims of the scam.
If you add up everything that across the whole family, we've put in close to £200,000. He's a rat, isn't he? I mean, you know, the whole thing. He set that up. He consciously set that up with the sole intention of taking people's money.
Police in Switzerland have arrested several people in connection with the use of a suicide device. Assisted suicide is legal in Switzerland, but is strictly regulated and requires medical supervision. Imogen Folks reports from Geneva.
The Sarko suicide pod is a capsule into which nitrogen is pumped when the person inside, wishing to die, presses a button. Switzerland's health minister said the pod did not conform to safety regulations or to laws on chemicals. But the group promoting the pod went ahead anyway, allowing a woman in her 60s, believed to be from the United States, to use it to die. Now, several group members are under arrest and the pod's legality will be tested in the Swiss courts.
And the weather forecast, patchy light rain will move into northern England from Scotland. Elsewhere, it'll be clear and mainly dry. Feeling chilly inland in Scotland and Northern Ireland with lows of 3 Celsius in Belfast, 5 in Edinburgh and 11 in London and Cardiff. BBC News, it's 7:03.
This is all smoke and mirrors. That's sales.
On BBC iPlayer.
What have you got to offer me?
Look, this is in all of our interests, right?
The new series of Industry.
I'm so glad you came.
Starring Kit Harington.
I'm an investment banker. Did you invite me here to watch you eat?
No, I invited you here to seduce you.
I've never met anyone with a bigger blind spot.
All's fair in love and war, right?
I needed my friend and you used me.
Industry.
Now, we go to work.
Starts next Tuesday on BBC iPlayer.
This is 5 Live Sport
with Kelly Cates.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Our focus this evening is on the League Cup third round. Aston Villa head to League One Wickham. Can Villa's super sub do it from the start tonight?
Gerrard shoots from a mile out. Oh!
Three more League Cup ties to keep you across, and we'll hear how the clean-up operation at Wimbledon's going after severe flooding saw their game with Newcastle postponed.
we've had a handful of staff in wellies and flip-flops getting rid of as much water out of the shop and the museum and the playing area as possible. Obviously, we're a fan-owned club, right? We don't have someone writing a big cheque to get us out of this hole.
The rain has stayed away in the cricket so far, and England's stand-in captain has put them in a strong position.
Clipped into the onside by Harry Brook, and with that, 50. And Harry Brook has started to move through the gears, and he started to look in really good touch.
This is Five Live Sports
with Kelly Cates.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
And we will be at the Riverside very shortly as England tried to keep the ODI series against Australia alive. There is loads of live football tonight in the League Cup and League One. But our base for tonight's commentary is Adams Park. It's Wycombe Wanderers against Aston Villa. Kickoff is at 8 o'clock. Alistair Bruce Ball is there for us. Good evening, Ali. The big boys have joined the party.
Yeah, they very much have, Kelly.
I mean, just... you and Glenn Murray, obviously.
We very much have. Sorry, not they very much have. That's exactly what you meant. No, it's a little while since I've been here, actually, Kelly. And the last time a Premier League team was here, Jose Mourinho and his Tottenham team were here in January 2021. So just under 4 years ago in the FA Cup fourth round. Gareth Bale played that night and scored. Tonight it's an Aston Villa team who come to town, who are absolutely flying in the Premier League, of course playing in the Champions League as well this season. Just got the team news in, Kelly, so just digesting it, furiously scribbling as I speak to you. Looking at the Villa team, 10 changes from the weekend, the 3-1 win against Wolves, the comeback win on Saturday. Amadou Onana is the only one who remains in the starting 11, and a couple of youngsters in there as well. The centre-back, the Dutch centre-back, Swinkels, making only his second appearance for the team. He'll play alongside Lamar Bogard in the centre of the Villa defence. And Caden Young, an 18-year-old winger, will make his debut for Aston Villa. And in terms of the Wycombe team, which has just arrived, it's 8 changes actually from their weekend win against Cambridge United, so you might raise a few eyebrows at that. But they had an impressive win against Swansea of the Championship in the last round of this competition, and it's only 2 changes from that team. So Lubala comes in up front in terms of that team, and David Wheeler gets a first start of the season for Wycombe as well.
Ali, thank you very much. And Glenn, we'll talk about this game in a few minutes' time. But for you, really good memories in this competition. In 2012, in particular, was that the season of the extra time winner against Man United at Old Trafford?
Oh, if it was, that's depressing, Kelly. Seems an awful long time ago now. Whatever the year, it was a really good memory, and to beat a Manchester United team. It was quite a good one, actually, in the Cup that day. My goal often gets forgotten about because Darren Ambrose scored an absolute screamer. It was a thunderbolt from about 35 yards. But the funny thing about that night is we flew out of Liverpool Airport, and we've never been welcomed so well in an airport.
Glenn, for now, thank you very much. You might say it gets a bit forgotten about. Never by us. We will be back with Glenn Murray and Alistair Bruce Ball very shortly. We're also going off to the Etihad now, where Manchester City are hosting a Watford side who are without a win in their last 3 matches. John Bennett, they're up against it.
Yeah, and the bad news for them today, Kelly, is that despite the tightest of turnarounds after the drama here against Arsenal, 49 hours ago, Pep Guardiola has, with a couple of exceptions, gone with an established and strong lineup. So Walker and Doku started Sunday and start tonight alongside the likes of Foden, Grealish and Stones. But it's a very special night for a 16-year-old, Caden Braithwaite, who makes his senior debut at centre-back for Man City, the third youngest player in the club's history. Remember, they haven't won this trophy since 2021. They went out in this round last season. As for Watford, they've also made 9 changes. Their boss, Tom Cleverley, has called this the test they need right now after their bad run that you mentioned. They actually started the season with 5 straight wins.
John, thank you very much for that. Barrow are making their first appearance in the League Cup third round since the 1967-68 season. They've never reached the fourth round. They have a tough task ahead of them today, travelling to Stamford Bridge to take on Chelsea. John Southall's there. Evening, John.
Evening, Kelly. Yes, I think it's fair to say it looks a tall order for this for Barrow tonight, but they have close to 3,000 fans here with them, and they couldn't be in much better form. They're top of League Two with 5 wins from their opening 7 games. That's just 1 defeat. The players had their cameras out when they took a look around the pitch a little earlier on, and just one change from their win on Saturday. Chelsea have gone for the full house. They've changed the lot from Saturday's win at West Ham. 11 changes, but it's still a front four of Neto, Felix, Mudrick and Nkunku. Such is the strength of the squad. Cassidy makes his first league start for the club, and Ben Chilwell's on the bench, back from the brink. The two sides have met just once before, back in 1948. Chelsea won that FA Cup game by 5-0. You'd expect a similar scoreline tonight. You never know, Kelly. It would be a monumental upset if Barrow won here tonight.
Yeah, as you say, John, no problem with depth of squad for Chelsea as they set to take on Barrow at Stamford Bridge. Leicester City's only win this season came against League Two Tranmere in the second round of this competition. Tonight, they're up against another League Two side in Walsall. Lee Blakeman is at the Bescot Stadium. Hi, Lee.
Hello, Kelly. Yeah, 5 Premier League games out of 5 without a win mean Leicester could do with tonight being as routine as it was in the last round against Tranmere, because there were a few boos following the draw against Everton at the King Power on Saturday, with fans worried about the start that they've made and not too encouraged by their next league game, which is the easy one, that is Arsenal away. They've made 10 changes tonight from the Everton game, with Caleb Okoli the only person to stay in the starting 11, but they still have a strong side with the likes of Fatau, Decord Overeed, Pereira, Connor Cody and Odson Edward all starting. Walsall will want to make life difficult for Leicester, though, encouraged by a start that's seen them win 5 of their first 7, all of their last 3, and they sit third in the League Two table as a result. They've made 3 changes from their win at Salford at the weekend.
Lee, thank you very much for that. So reporters at 4 of the games that are taking place in the League Cup in this third round night, Chelsea, Barrow, Man City, Watford, Walsall, Leicester all kick off at 7:45, and our commentary game Wickham against Aston Villa kicks off at 8 o'clock. Let's check in on the one day cricket as well. England are playing Australia in a day nighter in Durham. The Aussies lead the 5-match series 2-0, so this is a must win for England. England World Cup winner Alex Hartley and Eleanor Aldroyd are in the North East for us this evening. Good evening, Eleanor.
Hello, hello, Kelly. Yes, Liam Livingstone has just come in and got off the mark with a 6, which has also brought up the England 200, so they're 204 for 4, 101 needed to win. Harry Brook has played absolutely brilliantly with his 90 off 81 balls. He has absolutely been... this is kind of classic Harry Brook, Alex, isn't it? This is swashbuckling best.
Yeah, this is where, you know, he's manipulating the field. He's really toying with the Aussies. He's doing a fantastic job. But for me, he's really shown his maturity today with that partnership with Will Jacks, just weathering the storm after England lost 2 quick wickets. And now England are in control of this game.
Yes, it could be... Anything can happen, though. A wicket to fall at this stage could make it a bit nail-biting. We could get some weather as well, Kelly. It's pretty dark over to our left-hand side. DLS score at the moment 192, so England are ahead of that. 205 for 4, so they need another 100 to win.
Ellie and Alex, thank you very much for that. Coverage continues on Sports Extra, but our base on 5 Live Sport this evening is Adams Park for Wickham Wanderers against Aston Villa. We heard from Glenn Murray and Alistair Bruce Ball earlier. Former Wickham captain Joe Jacobson is alongside them as well. We'll be hearing from him very shortly. And I'm pleased to say, joining us now, Wickham manager Matt Bloomfield. Good evening to you, Matt.
Good evening, all. How are you doing? You all right?
Good, yeah. Thank you so much for your time. I imagine your focus is elsewhere rather than in radio interviews right at the moment. And look, you'll be focused on tonight's match, but it's hard to resist going down memory lane with you a little bit, because you were part of that 2007 squad that reached the League Cup semi-finals. Do you see parallels with that squad and the one you have now?
Yeah, in terms of, you know, embracing a big night for us, you know, I've been lucky enough to play in some big nights here at Adams Park under the lights, and this place is magical when that happens, and we have to believe that what tonight can be one of those nights. You know, we've been extremely fortunate in this competition in the past, and there's no reason why we can't repeat that tonight.
And I want to talk about the first half of the game when Villa came to Adams Park in 2005 as well, because you were on the pitch for that and 3-1 up at half-time.
Yeah, it was an incredible 45 minutes for us. We absolutely loved it. We played really, really well. And I remember at half-time, John Gorman, who I absolutely love, he was a great manager for us. He was a big entertainer in the way he wanted to go about things. He asked us to get the fourth and kill the game off. But obviously, as we know, it's a bit unfortunate for us. But we came off conceding 7 and losing 8-3. So it was one of the best first 45, followed by the worst 45 of my career. But I actually really enjoyed the night because it was just entertaining all around.
Yeah, well, we'll gloss over the second half of that one and start focusing on tonight's game. Look, you've made 8 changes, Matt, for this one. Just talk to me about the process and what you factor into your thinking when it comes to team selection.
Yeah, there's loads in terms of the team selection. You know, we're missing quite a few through injury. We've got 2 cup-tied. Dan Udo went off injured on Saturday. We've got G-Mac at 37, who we have to respect his age and his stage. We've got Cam Humphreys on loan from Ipswich, who missed pre-season, that we have to be careful with the minutes that he's playing and the amount of output he's putting into it. So there's so many things that go into it, but ultimately you come down to picking a team that you believe can go and win the game, and I believe that we have one of those tonight.
And I know you know Joe Jacobson as well. Joe, good evening to you. Massive test tonight, but you'll have noticed Wickham's fantastic form coming into this.
Yeah, they've been playing incredible football this season as well, not just getting results, but the performances as well have been up there with the best over the years here. And 5 out of the last 6 victories, 3 at home as well. So they've got a real opportunity tonight, I think, of causing a huge upset.
And you and Matt have been catching up off air, I believe, in the last few minutes.
Yeah. We speak often, as we, you know, played at the same team for 10 years. He was a teammate, a captain, a coach, a manager. So we go back a long way. We played in some incredible nights, like he mentioned, here at Adams Park over the years. And, you know, you could feel the atmosphere building already, and you can feel like it could be another one of those evenings.
Glenn, I know you wanted to ask Matt something as well.
Yeah, I just want to pick up on what Matt said at the start of the interview there, and when his manager was John Gorman. If you find yourself 3-1 up at half-time, what's your message going to be?
I can tell you what it's not going to be. It's not going to be about looking for the fourth, I can tell you that. You know, I love playing for John, and it felt like every week was a 4-3 or a 5-4, and I think a lot of that did rub off on me. But if we find ourselves ahead tonight, you're not going to see us throwing men forward. You can be assured of that.
Matt, there's been a change of style under you from Gareth Ainsworth's style at Wickham. Just talk to me about adapting that and how that works, and actually what value there is in testing it against a side like Villa.
Yeah, I think all I'm trying to do is to be myself. You know, I think if I try to replicate what the gaffer done before me, I'd be a clone. If I'm trying to do it differently, then, you know, all I'm trying to do is be myself, play with a style that I believe is correct for us in this group. You know, football's evolving all the time, and you know, I've been given a really fortunate opportunity to lead a special football club. You know, and the style is evolving. We're just trying to do what we feel is right, in the manner of which is proper for this group. So yeah, there's lots that goes into it. There's lots of tactical elements that go into it, and we're trying to, if we can show ourselves tonight with the identity that we're building, play with the character that we have been, then, you know, I'll be really proud.
Matt, I'm just sitting here, you know, scribbling down the 2 teams ahead of the commentary this evening, looking at both teams. What have you made of this fella, number 9 for Aston Villa, John Duran, who's obviously not been starting for them this season, but every time he comes off the bench, scores a goal?
Yeah, Villa have, you know, there's been a lot made of the changes that they've made, but they've got, you know, proven quality throughout their team. They've got players that have been bought for, you know, Buendia was 40 million, I believe. We played against him in the Championship when we were there. JJ would have played that day against Norwich, and they've got proven quality throughout their team. Duran obviously has got, you know, a big goal in him as well. They've got some really good passes in, you know, Onana and Bogard, we played against a few years ago at Bristol Rovers as well. So there's proven quality throughout their team. Make no mistake, we have got a very, very tough opposition ahead of us tonight with, like I say, proven quality. But we want to show ourselves in the best light, and if we do that, we believe that there can be an entertaining encounter.
Well, what do you do differently in the build-up to this game, Matt? Or do you do anything differently?
Nothing. We analyse the opposition. We try and present to the players their strengths and their weaknesses, how we believe that we can impose ourselves on the game, and the things that we have to respect and understand about our opposition. And, you know, it was tough in many ways because we didn't know what team, you know, in a league game there's a lot more analysis in terms of knowing what team you're coming up against. There was a little bit of speculation into what changes were going to be made tonight, but we believe that the identity of Aston Villa will be exactly the same, albeit with slightly different personnel. So, yeah, it's been exactly the same. We've prepared in the way we do for every single game, whether that be Bristol Street Motors League game or Carabao Cup tonight. And like I say, all I'm focusing on now is to make sure the boys feel comfortable, they feel settled, and they're ready to go and play.
What do you think is your best chance of getting a result tonight? What has to happen?
We have to be at our best, and Aston Villa have to be below their best, you know, because if you look at the value of the 2 teams, the money spent and the you know, the pedigree of the players and the level they play at, you know, there's no doubt in the quality that Aston Villa have. But if we can play above our levels and Aston Villa dip below theirs. You know, if there's one thing I've learnt about cup ties here over the years is you have to be at your ultimate best and your opposition have to be slightly below. The crowd have to feel that there's an upset on the cards. If we can get them involved in the game and play with a little bit of motion in the ground, then we have a chance of picking up a result. But at the same time, I don't want to, you know, get too carried away. We're up against really, really good opposition and we have to respect that. We have to be really, really good out of possession tonight in terms of when we press and how we press. And if we can do that and utilise the ball as cleverly as we possibly can do, then we hope and we believe that we can cause them some problems.
Matt, good luck tonight. Thanks so much for sparing the time to talk to us.
Lovely to have you. Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you very much to Matt Bloomfield, their Wickham manager, ahead of their game against Aston Villa that kicks off at 8 o'clock. Live commentary of that on Five Live Sport coming up for you. We're also keeping an eye on the day-nighter. Let's check in with Eleanor Aldroyd.
Yes, it's very much night now, Kelly, but Harry Brook has just brought the crowd to his to their feet with a brilliant century, 104 off, where is he now, 88 balls. And he's taken risks, Alex Hartley, but he's played sensibly as well. And he hopefully may have taken England into a possibly winning position at 227 for 4.
Yeah, he's been so mature today and you could just see how much that meant to him. That's his first ever ODI century. It's his highest score in an England shirt in ODI cricket, so it obviously means a lot to him. He's been under pressure as England captain. He's a young England captain, came in instead of, remind me, who's...
Well, Joss Butler was
injured. Joss Butler's injured. I was firing blanks then.
You've had a long day.
I have had a long day. Joss Butler's not played for so long. I forgot. He was a white ball captain. So he's coming instead of Joss Butler and captain this side. And they've been beaten heavily in the first two games and he's come out, he's had a point to prove and he's done fantastically well today.
Yeah, a little bit of focus on some of his decision making as well and some of his comments afterwards as well, where it made it sound like he didn't care.
Yeah, honestly that's just been taken out of context because you every time anybody pulls on an England shirt they care more than anything in the world. It's what you dream of doing as a kid. What he means by not care is actually the next time you hit it, it could go for 6. It doesn't matter. It's only a game of cricket. It doesn't mean to say you don't care. You know, someone's going to be sat in that dressing room. They're going to be devastated if they get out. It's not like a, oh well, off to the pub we go, lads. It's just been taken out of context.
Yeah, but he's played really well here, Harry Brook, and he will have enjoyed this moment and he will deserve to go to the pub if he gets the chance to later on. 104 he's made off at 88 balls. Liam Livingstone at the other end, 15, and England 228 for 4. They need another 77 in 91 balls.
Thank you, Ellie. Thank you, Alice. Got me thinking about the pub now. But we are staying here to focus on Wickham against Aston Villa, that 8 o'clock kickoff. So as mentioned at the top of the programme, John Duran starts his first match of the season for Villa. Alistair Bruce-Paul, just remind us how well he's started the season for Villa.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him live, Kelly, for the first time last week in the Champions League against Young Boys, when again, he came off the bench in that game, scored a goal that was disallowed, wound up the Young Boys fans, made an absolute nuisance of himself, and he was that classic sort of centre forward that even out of possession, just the centre backs could not rest with him on the field. He is in cracking form. He's really difficult to handle. He's desperate to try and get in this team. I think we're all sort of asking ourselves as we watch Aston Villa this season, you know, can he and Ollie Watkins at some point sort of play together? Because Unai Emery's got you know, just fantastic choice there, but he has this incredible ability of coming off the bench to score goals. 4 times in the Premier League this season it has happened. So in terms of sort of the ratio of, you know, goals to minutes on the pitch, he is in exceptional form. So I'll be really interested to watch him this evening, because if he sets about it like he did on Tuesday night, then Wickham have got a problem.
Glenn, you must feel the frustration of John Duran. As Ali was just saying, is there 5 goals in 6 competitions, all of them coming off the bench. He gets a start this evening against Wickham, but he's trying to displace Ollie Watkins, who's the clear first choice for Unai Emery, who delivered last season with 27 goals. What more can John Duran do?
Just be consistent, keep doing what he's doing. But I think in all fairness, Kelly, when you get a look at it, and if you stand back a little bit, I think at the start of the season, if he thought so soon into his Aston Villa reign he would be so close to pushing for that starting place, I think he would have snapped your arm off. So he's probably ahead of himself already in that regard, because when he signed for the club, you never ever would have thought that he'd be chasing Ollie Watkins' heels down and pushing him so hard for a starting berth. So I think he'll be quite happy in his role, in what he's doing, in coming off and coming on and scoring. His confidence growing. but tonight is a different test. It's going to be something different to what he's ever come across. I mean, obviously the Premier League's very glamorous. This one's a no-win situation for Aston Villa. They're expected to blow Wickham out of the water, and Wickham will have other ideas about that, and he will be a marked man, especially among the Wickham players. They will be aware of what he can do from all areas of the pitch, so they're going to be super tight to him, and it's up to him to keep pushing, keep proving, and do you know what, goals, keep scoring goals, and he will get that starting berth.
Joe, when Wickham have done their analysis and they've looked at John Durand, they know that he can score from close range. They know that he can score from distance, spectacular goals as well. How do you approach trying to stop him from a defensive point of view?
I think it's difficult. You don't want to just focus totally on one player and what their strengths are. I think you've got to try and think about where you can hurt him, and as your defensive unit, can they keep the ball away from him, can they make him run around a little bit, and you know, just not give him that time and space. And I think it helps here at Adams Park that the pitch is so tight, it's so small, it's very different to Villa Park where there is a lot more space for him to operate in. So it's just about getting tight and not allowing him to kind of take a shot off or get free in the box, and just making sure that these big games for me over the years are all about concentration, making sure that you're always aware of where players are, because their movement's different to what you're up against week in, week out.
Ali, as far as Aston Villa are concerned and their hopes potentially of going all the way in this tournament, they've already taken one huge leap forward, getting back in the Champions League this season. They're pushing at the top end of the Premier League. Silverware, which they haven't got since 1966 when they won this competition, surely has to be next on that checklist.
Yeah, I think Unai Emery has said, hasn't he, Kelly, that this, you know, has been honest enough to admit that I think this would be the lowest down in terms of priorities for them. And actually in the last few seasons they've been knocked out at this stage of the competition. Obviously that wasn't always him in charge. I think the really interesting thing with Aston Villa this season, they have come flying out of the blocks, obviously got off to a winning start in the Champions League and won 4 out of 5 in the Premier League, the only defeat at home against Arsenal. But the real test of the squad, I think, is going to be the further the season goes and trying to keep it going on all fronts. And that's why you'd say he has taken a little risk with the team selection this evening. You know, we've got Sil Swinkels, a 20-year-old Dutch defender, making only his second appearance for the club at centre-back. Caden Young's an 18-year-old winger. He's making his debut for the club. Joe Gauchi's an Australian who was signed in February, who's going to be in goal. There isn't too much backup on the bench. But as Matt Bloomfield was saying, there's great quality in this squad as well. Lamar Bogard has already dropped into the Premier League and done well for Aston Villa at right back. I think he's going to play centre back this evening. Ian Matson was signed for big money from Chelsea. He's not really had a chance. He's been coming off the bench to replace Luca Dean. Ross Barkley, we know all about him. Brilliant for Luton last season. Has looked really good when he's got on the field for Villa this season as well. And Leon Bailey, who's been out of the side just a little bit with injury, is starting as well tonight. So I think Unai Emery, I think it's just that classic cup scenario, Kelly, where if Aston Villa turn up with the right attitude here, they do have the quality, should have the quality to beat Wickham. If they don't, though, if they are slightly off it, as Matt Bloomfield said, then Wickham are in such good form in League One and flying that it could be really difficult for them. So it's really nicely set up as a cup tie, I think.
Alistair Bruce Ball, Glenn Murray, Joe Jacobson, for now, thank you very much. Villa haven't won a major trophy since the League Cup in 1996. I think I said 66, when obviously the big story was around another piece of silverware. Let's go back to the other League Cup fixtures, starting with Walsall against Leicester City. Now, Lee Blakeman, we heard from earlier, alongside him, former Hull City and Derby County captain, Curtis Davis. Good evening to you, Curtis.
Good evening,
so,
how are
you? No wins yet for Leicester in the Premier League. How important then could a good cup run, or even just a good cup performance, just a victory against Walsall be?
I think it's obviously very important. I think when you can't get the points in the league, you need to look elsewhere to gain that confidence. But at the same time, there's only one surviving member of that team that played against Everton. So the players that are maybe going to be warming the bench are going to be the ones with the confidence. So it doesn't really have that same effect. But I believe that winning breeds confidence, and hopefully that does have a knock-on effect. But ultimately, this is a game they should win. Anything else other than a win, even if they play really well, is kind of standard. So I think in terms of the league form, I think they've obviously only managed to draw the 3 games this season and not won a game yet. But if you look at the fixtures coming up, after the Arsenal game away, they've got a run of Bournemouth, Southampton, Forest, Ipswich, and that's when we'll start to see what Leicester are about. I think we'll start to know where or whereabouts they're going to be and what they can bring to this league.
And as you say, they do have draws, they do have points on the board in the Premier League, and as you also said, this is going to be a different group of players taking part at this stage of the EFL Cup, certainly. But they were expected to be bottom of the league because there was talk about points deductions. But now, having seen their performances, what do you think they can aim for in the Premier League? Because that has a knock-on effect to what they're hoping to do in the Cups.
Yeah, it does have a knock-on effect. I think it had a knock-on effect with, I guess, what happened with the manager as well. I think the manager, as much as Chelsea's a great draw, the fact that he maybe thought they'd have to work with a limited budget and also a potential points deduction probably added to the fact that he was going to leave. But I think in general, I think it's a big weight off of their shoulders as a club, as a group of players. But it's about getting those performances on the pitch and making sure they get the points, because I believe this is a team and a squad that I think that can compete to obviously more than stay in this league, with the signings of the likes of Edouard and De Cordova-Reed that don't even make the starting lineup in the league currently that are playing tonight. You know, they've got quality throughout, so when you're able to draw those kind of players off the bench, you must be seen as a good team. But it's ultimately about that starting 11, what they're going to do week in, week out, and as I said, they've had a few difficult fixtures to start the season, playing Tottenham, playing Aston Villa. You know, that those games were difficult games, maybe that it's a bit forced, but as I said, over these next six games, bar Arsenal and Manchester United, but even Manchester United, maybe fancy yourselves, we'll start to see what Leicester are about.
So Curtis is at Walsall against Leicester City. It's a trip to Stamford Bridge for Barrow. John Southall is going to be watching this one. Quite possibly, John, Barrow's biggest ever match.
Yeah, you can probably hear their fans actually just away to our left-hand side in the shed end. The players have just got across to them just before they make their way back down the tunnel. It's a massive night for Barrow, for the players, for the fans. Near on 3,000 have made the trip, and it is a long way. It's a 600-mile round trip. So, you know, they're not going to get home till 3:30 in the morning, but it's a massive occasion for them. I think, as you said in the intro, they've never been, or the last time they were at this stage of the League Cup was back in 67-68. They've never been higher than the third tier in the English pyramid. And let's not forget, they were a non-league team not too long ago. So, yeah, it is a massive night for them against what is a very strong Chelsea side, even though they've made 11 changes tonight.
And the Barrow manager, Stephen Clemens, spoke to Radio Cumbria ahead of the trip to Stamford Bridge.
It's fantastic the amount of people we're taking down to Stamford Bridge. I believe there's 2,600 sold at the moment. So we really appreciate the support that is coming down to try and cheer us on. But we do understand it's going to be a very, very difficult game. We know we're going to have to be at our very best. We know probably Chelsea will have to be at their very worst if we're going to have a chance in the game. We're not just playing a Premier League team, we're playing a superpower of world football. And yeah, they might not have had some of the success they've been used to over the last couple of years, but it weren't too long ago when they were winning the Champions League. It doesn't seem long ago anyway. So and they've got European Championship winners, they've got World Cup winners in the squad. It's going to be a difficult game, but it's one we're determined to go there and enjoy.
Obviously, for yourself, I mean, your own career, do you find yourself drawing back those memories of playing at Stamford Bridge yourself, yeah, and knowing a bit about what that atmosphere can be like in terms of passing that on to your players?
I can still remember trying to chase Frank Lampard about and Robin and Joe Cole and Drogba and Zola, and I can still remember it like it wasn't too long ago, and a very, very difficult team to play against. I haven't been too successful against Chelsea in my career up to this point. I've tried to beat them with Tottenham, tried to beat them with Birmingham, and then obviously you go into my coaching career where it's been Hull City and Newcastle, and I think there's one or two others as well, but managed to beat them at Newcastle not so long ago. I haven't been on the I haven't won too many games against them, let's put it that way.
That was Stephen Clemens, who is now the Barrow manager, preparing to face Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Glenn Murray and Curtis Davis are still with us. And Glenn, you're a Barrow boy.
I was, yeah, I played for Barrow. They were part of my journey, Kelly, a long, long time ago.
Not just played, six games and six goals.
Yeah, yeah, it was a rich vein of form I was in, Kelly. And that is actually what led to my break in professional football, and Paul Simpson taking me at Carlisle. So it was really key in my career being that down at Barrow. And let me just tell you, we weren't playing the likes of Chelsea back then.
But look, they do have a big opportunity. And as Stephen Clemens said, even as a player, it wasn't a great record against Chelsea. But for Barrow, Curtis, what do they have to do here? Is it about breaking the game down into chunks, just trying to get through those 10-minute periods?
Yeah, I think that's a key thing. I think if you look at it and think, right, we're going to go and set our stall to be solid, I think that's obviously always a good base. But you need to do it, I think, like you say, in 10-minute, 15-minute periods of, can we get through to this part of the game? Can we get through to that part of the game? I think a big thing will be slowing the game down as much as possible. Take time on every single throw and every single free kick. Try and frustrate them. But the thing that you don't want is to concede an early goal. Concede an early goal against a side like that. As much as they've made a lot of changes today, the strength of the players that are coming in, you know, we're talking about internationals and top players that have cost multi-millions and millions. So I think it's about trying to keep them quiet for as long as possible. But if you are to concede, don't feel like you need to jump to try and get back in the game straight away. I think if you look at what happened to Barnsley at Manchester United, a 7-0 defeat, fair enough they managed to bounce back and win in the league themselves. But Barrow, how well they're going in the league, they wouldn't like to upset the momentum and upset confidence. So I think they'll be going there trying to put on a solid performance, but not to upset themselves and get too upset with a beating, really.
So breaking up the play, and then should there be any stoppages, not being in too much of a hurry to get things underway. So a bit of the dark arts is what you're advising tonight then, Curtis?
If you want to call them that, yeah. It's gamesmanship, I guess. I think ultimately when you play against teams like Chelsea, you start to see, obviously, they want to play a good rhythm and they want to keep their momentum going, and they'll put the ball down and keep the ball moving because of the structure of their team. They know where everyone is and they can play quick passes. So you're able to upset that. I think with all due respect, we saw it from Arsenal the weekend, and Arsenal are a top team in this country, and if they're able to do it against a Man City side, what are you expecting from Barrow going down to Chelsea that are three leagues apart? So it's one of those things that, yes, sometimes it's frowned upon, but I don't think people would be too mad with Barrow for going there and breaking the game up.
No, it might just be the canny option. Thank you very much, Curtis. Lovely to talk to you. And let's head back to the cricket. Eleanor Aldroyd's watching the third one-day international between England and Australia in Durham.
Yes, Kelly, rain has just stopped play here at Chesterley Street. 254 for four is the England score, so they need another 51 runs in 74 balls. 305 is the target. Harry Brook has played absolutely beautifully. 110 he's got off 94 balls with 13 fours and two sixes. And Liam Livingstone's come in and he's just whacked it around as well. 33 off 20. Classic Liam Livingstone innings with three sixes already in that 33. Just to say that if we don't get any more play, I don't know how, it doesn't look that heavy, the rain here, but if we don't get any more play, England are well ahead on Duckworth Lewis Stern, because that figure is 208 and they're 254 for four. Mark Wood sitting alongside me, England and Durham fast bowler, of course. I mean, you know about the weather up here. Do you think this is going to be it, or
it's just a light sprinkle, isn't it? It's a light sprinkle. We should be fine. I mean, there's a couple of guys with their shirt off over there. I'm sure they'll be absolutely fine. No, I think, you know, for the first time, I'm actually saying I don't actually mind that it's raining. We're well ahead of the game. A brilliant 100 by Harry Brook, who no doubt is probably a little bit tired. Gives him a nice little break. If we do have to go out there, it'll be a reduced total, and we'll pretty much be there anyway. So a fantastic knock, one which I think was pretty much a test match and to start with. He saw off that when the ball was moving around a bit, he saw it off, and he's just built and built from there. And actually to have 100 off, you know, just 90 balls, I mean, that's as good as it gets in one day cricket as well. So fantastic innings from him, a real captain's knock, and the series is back on, I think.
Yeah, and it's actually been pretty much a textbook ODI run chase, this, and we've talked a lot about the fact that a lot of these players hardly play any 50 over cricket, so they don't get the experience of timing in innings. In England, we're in all sorts of trouble at 11 for 2 when Ben Duckett was out, but then we saw this partnership between Will Jacks and Harry Brook of 156 before Jacks was out for 84, and they didn't go mad at the start. They eased themselves into it, and then they have been absolutely, you know, they've kept up with it all the way through.
Yeah, and I think that partnership was crucial. I think both sort of ends have mirrored each other a little bit in terms of that, you know, Australia struggled at the start and then they got that partnership. The only difference is that we've kicked on with Harry Brook getting this big 100, and Livingston's come in and he's took all the pressure off Brookie by getting a couple of sixes away, and he's come out like a train, really. So England, in the sense, he, like you said, not much experience, but this will give them a great load of confidence that they can do it against a good Australia attack. And yeah, feeling, although the rain's coming down, feeling pretty good.
Mark, obviously it's great for us to have you with us as part of the team, but you're having to miss the rest of the season because of this elbow injury that you have. How frustrating are you finding it, having to watch on?
It is frustrating. You always want to play, but I've actually enjoyed my day in the comms box. It's been a nice different angle to it. And
Ellie. She's just lovely company.
Exactly. Aww. Yeah, that's what it is. I think to have a different perspective, and it seems a lot easier up here, to be honest. I've not felt stressed. I've not done any mistakes. Or certainly cricket-wise, I've not made any mistakes. I feel pretty good. But I always want to be out there. And the fact that I'm out for a long time until the new year is especially frustrating. But hopefully be back at it soon and keep myself ticking over until then.
Where are you with the injury? How is it progressing?
Well, at the minute I'm in a bit, I would suggest, probably a bit of no man's land, which is the most frustrating thing. I've got a scan again next week. My elbow had some bone stress in it, so it was just a case of shutting my arm down really for 4 weeks. I've got to have it re-scanned next week and then hopefully make a plan from there. But it's the new year, which I'm looking at, and no bowling until Christmas time at the minute. That could change, but no bowling until then. So it's a long time of school runs, a little bit of gym, and trying to keep myself busy.
You mentioned the school run. I heard you on TMS earlier saying that you can't even really pick the kids up at this stage.
that's changed now. I think my wife had enough of that after 2 weeks, so that's as much as I could get out of it. So yeah, 2 weeks of just lifting them up with my left arm. It was particularly difficult because when one was getting a little bit jealous of the other, I was trying to have to try pick two up with my left arm. So I'm hoping by the end I might have a left arm like Arnold Schwarzenegger, and be, you know, the lads will think I've been doing all these weights in the gym when really I've just been picking them two up with one arm.
Oh, look, for home life and for cricket life, wish you very best in your recovery, Mark. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you very much to Mark Wood and to Eleanor Aldroyd, watching the third one day international between England and Australia in Durham. Three games in League One tonight. Let's start in East London, where Aaron Paul is watching Leighton Orient against Peterborough.
Where back-to-back wins have jolted Leighton Orient into life after a typically lacklustre start. Richie Wellingside begin the evening 20th, 10 places below their visitors. Peterborough, who survived a late scare to beat Bristol Rovers at the weekend. Chris Conn-Clark misses out for the visitors, but Ricky J. Jones is fit to start for Posh. Orient remain unchanged from the side that thumped Stockport at the weekend.
Aaron, thank you very much for that. To West Yorkshire now, Huddersfield hosting Steve Bruce's Blackpool, and Adam Cotty is there.
Hi, Kelly. Yeah, up against one of his old clubs tonight, Steve Bruce. It's two league wins from two since his appointment at Blackpool. They won at Charlton at the weekend, but are without their captain tonight, James Husband, injured. So Hayden Coulson has taken his place in Bruce's so far successful 4-4-2 setup. Blackpool are 13th after six League One games this season. Huddersfield 5th after winning four of theirs under Michael Duff after their relegation from the Championship. And for the home side, there's first league starts for Joe Hodge, for Herbie Kane and Freddie Ladapo.
Thank you very much for that, Adam. And finally, let's head to the Brick Community Stadium. It's Wigan against Stevenage, and watching that one for us, Sunny Rudravadula.
Equal records between them in mid-table. The Stevenage children have been conceived and born since they last won away from home. That was here 9 months ago. Wigan make four changes to the side that drew 0-0 at Lincoln and start their 2013 FA Cup winner Callum McManaman, still going strong in his third spell. Changes two for Stevenage from defeated Exeter. Five, top scorer Elliot List drops to the bench. Jamie Reid got 22 last season, still looking for his first goal. Let's see if there are any babies named after any goal scorers tonight, 9 months from now.
Or even after you, Sunny, if they listen to the commentary. Sunny Rudravadula will bring us up to date with everything that happens in that one. We've got three reporters at all three games in League One, and we're across all four games in the EFL Cup this evening, including our commentary match of Wickham against Aston Villa, which kicks off in just over 15 minutes' time. The other three are 7:45 kickoffs. At the Etihad, Manchester City are hosting Watford, and John Bennett is watching a 16-year-old tonight for Manchester City. Not quite a record breaker, John, but close.
Yeah, almost a record breaker. Caden Braithwaite, local lad, the third youngest player in Manchester City history. He's in a very strong team. The dust certainly hasn't settled at all since Man City's feisty 2-2 draw with Arsenal. But after just one day of rest, they're now aiming to avoid a second successive third round EFL Cup exit. So that's why Pep Guardiola has gone for a strong, established 11 with just one unfamiliar name, that 16-year-old Caden Braithwaite. As for Watford, they started the season with five straight wins, but they're struggling right now on a run of three games without a victory.
John, thank you very much for that. We'll let you focus on events there because that game is about to kick off, as are the other EFL matches, Chelsea Barrow and Walsall against Leicester. Still with us, though, Glenn is here, Joe is here and Curtis here. Glenn, a 16-year-old for a debut from Manchester City. You've got to have not just the skills, but a big personality for that.
Yeah, you do indeed. I'm sure all the older lads will look after him, but I'm sure he'd rather be on the light blue side than the Watford side tonight making his debut. At least he's going to have the lion's share of possession. He's going to be able to show what he's all about. And do you know what, on evenings like that, I think the younger you are sometimes, the less pressure there is, and he'll just have a brilliant evening, I'm sure.
Curtis, I just wonder from Watford's perspective about the timing of this visit to the Etihad, with the Arsenal game having been at the weekend, which, yes, will have taken a bit out of those players who played in that match, of the ones that start this evening. But also they've got a City side who are kind of, I know it was a draw, but buoyed by that last second equaliser.
I think whatever happened in that game, to be honest, I think it would always be a tall order going to City, however many changes they made, whoever played, it was always going to be a tall order. But I think, Tom Cleverley will be confident in his team and what they've done so far this season. An ex-Manchester United player with a little bit more on it maybe than others. I'm interested to see how they do, but it will be a very, very difficult night for them.
And Joe, you know all about poking that Manchester City bear as well, because when you played against Manchester City in the Cup, actually you went a goal up.
Yeah, it's probably the worst thing that we could have done, to be honest. It just woke up De Bruyne, Sterling, Mahrez, whoever else was on the pitch at that time. And look, you want to take your opportunities. If you're Watford, you want to have a game plan, and we certainly did, but it's Manchester City. It's going to be very difficult to stop, and you know they've got a very good mix of youth and experience in their team, and you know that team's probably good enough to beat half the Premier League teams as well. So it's going to be a very difficult evening for Watford. But if Man City can carry some sort of hangover from the weekend and Watford have a great evening, then who knows what can happen.
Glenn, there's a lot of talk about Rodri's injury, and Pep Guardiola's been talking to TV and said, look, he's going to be out for a while. There's no specifics on that. There are reports of an ACL, although that hasn't been confirmed, but it is a knee injury. How much do you think it makes a difference to Manchester City's title challenge?
I think it's a huge difference, especially when you look at his record of being unbeaten for so long in his games. It does the dirty work, the work that not many people recognise. He's not the one that's doing Cruyff turns on the edge of the box and bending it in from 18 yards like a Phil Foden does, and he gets applauded for it. He's the one that knits the team together. He's the one that organises them. He's the one that asks the questions, that demands from the players, and I think it's huge. It's a huge loss for them. I actually went for Arsenal at the start of the season, but when they brought Gundogan in, I thought it was slightly tipping back towards City. But now with Rodri out for the season, I do feel as though the balance has swung in Arsenal's direction quite a lot.
He did say, Curtis, before this, that the players are being asked to play too many games. And I want to make sure I sort of put this fairly and represent his comments fairly. He was asked about the possibility of strike action, and he said, look, there could very well be conversations around that because of the number of games that players are being asked to play. What do you think about the number of games that players at that level are now being asked to play?
Listen, I think that when it comes to potential, obviously, expansion of the Champions League, adding the extra league games, as it were, rather than group stage games, the potential expansion of the FIFA World Club Cup, which is obviously going to bring more teams into it, not just the champions of the associations, that obviously becomes a little bit farcical at times, I guess. But I would say the other side of it, I've not sat at a top table. I've not been privileged enough to be a multi-international player and play in a Champions League, play in every competition and get to finals. But it's a privilege. You know, obviously, when you play for your country, it's a privilege. So if you don't want to go away with your country for these meaningless Nation League games, then don't go. You know, that's the way I'd see it. I think if you're tired, take a rest for maybe a couple of games in, be it qualifiers or in these Nations League games. If you think you're playing too much, that's the way I see it. And listen, like I said, I've not sat at the top table. I've not been in that situation, but I'd have bit your hand off to play a Champions League game and then be in an FA Cup, be it later round game, and then play for my country in a national break. I would have bit your hand off. So whilst I do understand and I believe what he said about the quality maybe dipping of certain players, I think if we look at Jude Bellingham last year, you know, probably had one of his lesser games in the Champions League final because of how many games he'd played. So we totally understand the quality and the drop off, but I think ultimately, like I say, for me a lot of it is a privilege. So I don't think particularly fans at home and probably lower league footballers will see Rodri's point as much.
Curtis, thank you very much for now. Curtis Davis is with us, Joe Jacobson is with us, and so too is Glenn Murray. And Glenn, Joe and Ali Bruce Ball are going to bring us commentary from Adams Park of Wickham against Aston Villa that kicks off in about 10 minutes' time. Tonight's commentary game in the Cup was actually supposed to be Wimbledon versus Newcastle, but you've probably heard about the pitch at King's Meadow, which is unplayable because the River Wandle flooded, and the tie is now going to be played at St James's Park next Tuesday. And Newcastle have donated £15,000 to a fundraiser for the club, which now stands at over £78,000. Aaron Paul has been following this story and joins us now. Look, despite the show of support that there's been for Wimbledon, this has been really tough, hasn't it?
Absolutely, Kelly. It feels like only yesterday that I was singing a poem to you on the emotional night that Wimbledon returned to Plough Lane after 29 long years away. And it has been a kind of happy home for them. The club were relegated in their first season back at the Lane. And it feels like it's just been a bit of a slow burner. But this season, there is a feeling that, you know, everything has gone so well on the pitch, something had to come and scupper it. And what was going to be the club's biggest event with a bona fide old Premier League rival in Newcastle United arriving in Southwest London was going to be the cherry on the cake and the proper return to Plough Lane. But this incident, over 100,000 litres of water pumped out the stadium yesterday, has just caused devastation. The club offices are ruined. There is going to need to be significant works done to the pitch. But I mean, all I've read on social media and all I've experienced is just pure resilience from Wimbledon fans. If there's a club it's going to happen to, it's going to happen to AFC Wimbledon, but they will find a way through it. And earlier on, I spoke to the club's managing director, James Woodruff, who really echoed those sentiments.
It's a disaster, obviously, but, you know, we've got to get matches played to minimise the risk of a fixture backlog, especially as we're doing so well in the league. So then attention turns to, you know, Saturday. We're supposed to be playing Accrington Stanley here at the stadium, but again, because of the pitch damage, it's not going to be possible. So really all of my efforts have been, other than, you know, helping the team get as much water out as possible, is what do we do about our games coming up? We've had a handful of staff, like, as I said, in wellies and flip-flops, getting rid of as much water out of the shop and the museum and the playing area as possible, whilst we've also been welcoming pitch consultants, insurers, sort of water experts from what's happening below the pitch. So we're trying to, you know, we're wearing multiple hats here, Aaron. You know us pretty well. We're a lean team, and obviously we're a fan-owned club, right? We don't have someone writing a big check to get us out of this hole, but, you know, as hopefully your listeners will know, the story of AFC Wimbledon is extraordinary. And this is another setback in our journey. But I've got absolutely no doubt that we will overcome the situation we're encountered. And, you know, it's amazing to see a fan setting up a Just Giving page to help us. Mm. And I think that's, you know, the football family are sending lots of love. And, you know, I've got volunteers texting me and ringing me saying, can I come down and help? And at the moment we are really focusing on the pitch and getting expert views on, okay, how do we get this pitch playable again? And, you know, the diggers are probably going to be on site tomorrow to excavate and really understand what's happened beneath the pitch. I think it's important to know that the River Wandle last broke its banks in the 1960s. So it's 68, been 60, yeah. Yeah, so it's been 60 years basically that, you know, this level of water has been seen in this area. And, you know, we're surrounded by concrete. There isn't, there's one route out to the Wandle and that was full. So all the water essentially is built up. Built up and flooded our concourses, and the pressure underneath the pitch has been so great that it's caused those really unusual and extraordinary scenes on the corner of our pitch.
That was AFC Wimbledon Managing Director James Woodruff speaking to Aaron Paul. Aaron's at Leighton Orient against Peterborough this evening. That's one of three games in League One, and we'll keep you up to date with everything that happens in that. We've got reporters at all three of them. We're also at all the EFL Cup games this evening. We've had our first goal of the evening. It's come at Manchester City, John Bennett.
Manchester City are not tired, Kelly. Manchester City 1, Watford 0. The worst possible start for Watford. An awful pass back by Ryan Porteous to his goalkeeper James McAtee, stole it for Man City. Watford couldn't recover, and it was Jeremy Doku with a fine low finish into the back of the net. It's been one-way traffic. Manchester City 1, Watford 0.
And there's been a goal at Chelsea, John Southall.
Yeah, we said Barrow didn't need to concede an early goal. That's what they've done. Chelsea 1, Barrow 0. João Félix with a scoop ball through to Christopher Nkunku, 12 yards out, and he finished it off, his fourth of the season. But you know what? They haven't started badly, Barrow. Aqua's just volleyed one over from the right of the area, but Chelsea lead by a goal to nil.
And let's check in on Walsall against Leicester with Lee Blakeman.
No goals here, 10 minutes gone, but it feels like when, not if, Leicester take the lead. As I say that, Walsall have just sent their first dangerous-looking ball into the penalty area, easily dealt with by Danny Ward. Down the other end, Leicester have sent a couple of really good-looking crosses into the Walsall box, but so far, Curtis Davis, nothing doing in front of goal despite their dominance of possession.
No, very moving the ball really well, moving it really quick, but what they're facing is a wall of Walsall red in front of them, with a back five and a three in front that are just swarming around, just trying to close the spaces. But as you say, they're moving the ball well, between the lines well, and it's just a matter of time before they get on the end of one of those crosses.
It's a well-drilled team, this Walsall team. They've conceded just four league goals so far this season, and they've conceded none tonight so far. Walsall nil, Leicester nil.
Lee and Curtis, thank you very much for that. Back to our commentary game now at Adams Park. It's Wycombe Wanderers against Aston Villa. Less than 5 minutes to go until kick-off in that one. Glenn Murray and former Wycombe captain Joe Jacobson are there for us for the game tonight. Joe, so you know these Wycombe players very well. You were part of that dressing room until very recently. And we heard earlier that, you know, they're going to be approaching this, in a sense, just like any other game. But of course it isn't just any other game. So what will the guys be like right now?
Yeah, everyone talks about it throughout the week of saying, you know, we're going to prepare the same as what we do. But it just has that extra feeling, you know, there's more family members, there's more friends that are asking for tickets. You know the game's on Sky, all the cameras are here, the build-up's here. You know there's a big Premier League in here. So you do feel that atmosphere, that big game atmosphere. But I think it's all about thriving on that now. It's all about being up for it, being excited, wanting to test yourself against the best players around and seeing if you can cause an upset and go down in history at this football club. And I think that's what it's all about.
Joe is part of our commentary team at Adams Park this evening alongside Glenn Murray and Alistair Bruceball.
Thank you, Kelly. A really special way for Wycombe Wanderers Football Club to celebrate their 137th birthday. The club formed back in 1887. Let's not forget it's only their 22nd season in the Football League. And actually, it's only their fourth appearance in the third round of this competition. But famously, as a League Two team back in 2007, made it all the way through to the semi-finals. The manager, Matt Bloomfield, part of that team. They knocked out Premier League teams on the way, Fulham in the second round and Charlton in the quarterfinals before they came up against Chelsea in the semi-finals, held them to a 1-1 draw at Adams Park here, and then lost the second leg by 4-0. But as Joe has been saying, they'll fancy their chances tonight. They're in really good form in League One. A great atmosphere inside the ground. Away end to our left is packed. Villa fans really noisy as the two teams came out. A very different looking Villa team to the one we've seen so far this season. They are in all white kits with claret trim, and Wycombe away to our right in the familiar light blue
and dark blue quarters in this ground that is nestled into the hillside in Buckinghamshire. The woodland has disappeared into the darkness opposite the Frank Adams stand opposite us, and I can just see John Duran and Amadou Onana in conversation before this game gets underway. I'll do the teams in just a second, Glenn. 10 changes Villa, 8 changes Wickham. We quite often see that in the early rounds of domestic cup competitions. I'm hoping, though, we've got a really good cup tie on our hands tonight, given Wickham's form this season, recent form.
Yeah, I think we have, yeah, definitely. Wickham will fancy their chances, especially if they can get this crowd on side. It's about staying in the game for a long period and not letting Aston Villa break them down. Listen, when we talk about Aston Villa, we're talking about a football club on the up. It's got a lot of momentum with it. It's punching its way into Europe. It's up near the top of the Premier League. These will be 11 confident players. And there'll be 11 players looking to try and get into Unai Emery's starting 11 in the Premier League, in the Champions League. So they'll want to do a good job tonight. They'll want to get themselves in the manager's office, knocking on the door, giving them a reason to be able to do that. But as for Wickham, they're on their own good run. And like I say, they will fancy the chances.
Well, Joe will tell us all about all we need to know about some of these Wickham players. We're going to watch the home team in a huddle right now. The two captains have already shaken hands. Villa in formation and ready to go. The Wickham team tonight, then 8 changes from the win over Cambridge on the weekend, but only 2 changes from the team that won in the last round away to Swansea. Argentine goalkeeper is Franco Ravizzoli. Jasper Pattenden at right back, Alex Hartridge, the former Exeter player, at left back, Welsh international Joe Lowe alongside Declan Skura, who is a developing talent here at Wickham. They're the two centre backs. Tyreek Backinson, Matt Butcher, and the skipper Josh Scowen in midfield. David Wheeler, only a second appearance of the season for him. The other one came in the big win, the 5-3 win against Brighton's under-21s in the Bristol Street Motors Trophy. He starts wide right. Kieran Sadlier on the left. And Berrily Lubala, who scored 4 goals in that trophy win against...
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary.